101.9 FM every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m. You'll hear Finding a Voice. My name is Bruce, host of that poetry-focused spoken word program. On it, you'll hear local readings and events, occasionally telephoned interviews across Canada, and always a touch of music. Again, Finding a Voice, here every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Check it out. Hope to catch you there.
Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
Walk quietly by, he won't bother you. He's a busy man, he's got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
What's for lunch today?
Alphabet soup.
Alphabet soup.
I made it special.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
It's alphabet soup.
We call it alphabet soup.
Alphabet soup.
Alphabet soup. Because we make it a lot with alphabet-shaped pasta.
The letters are now twice as big.
Whatever's fun, little stars, little letters. Sometimes I will use
alligator, big bear,
snake. Campbell's alphabet soup.
Soup from a can? Disgusting!
Well, today on the show, we have another very special guest. We're kind of continuing off from last week, and I've got the other half of Between Friends.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Sophia, this first album is by a band that hearing about them on the internet is almost inescapable, but I hadn't jumped into actually fully listening to their music until you brought this recommendation to me. Tell us about the first album of today's show.
Yeah, so today's album is going to be A Brief Inquiry into Online Relationships by the 1975. This is their third record. I feel like they had their self-titled, and then one in 2016, and then this one came out in 2018.
Yeah.
summer sun and get addicted to drugs and spend obscene amounts of awesome seeds and beans online. So just give yourself a try.
I love this album. The 1975, like, for better or for worse, I say it is my favorite band. It kind of, like, it made me and my sister bond. We bonded over them. Me and my best friend met because of their music. And I feel like this album is just, like, the pinnacle of all their strengths as a band.
So this album, like I said, I was going into this as a complete sort of stranger to their world and their music.
Mm-hmm.
This album is a brief inquiry into online relationships.
Yeah.
Off the bat, what does that title, like, read to you?
Well, I feel like just, like, not, I don't know Matty Healy personally, but mm-hmm. just, like, following his career and his trajectory, I feel like he's so interested in how the internet shapes us and how we, like, are losing our humanity. Basically,
yeah.
What makes us kind of sincere and connect with each other, we're losing that in service of trying to always be correct all the time and get into fights online and defend ourselves and have all this perception of ourselves constantly for everyone to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this album came out when I was in, like, the 10th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, when you're 16, you're like, whoa, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. But as I got older and I kept revisiting and revisiting the album, it just makes more sense and gets more relevant because
yeah.
as I get older, you know, start dating, like, doing all this stuff, I feel like there is kind of a wall between people sometimes.
Yeah.
And I feel like this album kind of articulates that very well.
talking about this album in interviews, Matty Healy speaks about how online relationships, the first thing that jumps into your mind is like Tinder or sort of like relationships like that. Mm-hmm. But he's also talking about how like the people that view your Instagram story, like that's an online relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
One of his songs, I think it's I Couldn't Be More in Love, is I think we're going to play that. He says that it's about, it's a love song to his fans because it's very much like, I don't know you personally, but I love you.
Yeah.
Like we have that bond. And although like it is very much, there is like a parasocial kind of relationship to it. The person who's like at the other end of that relationship is part of that relationship. Mm-hmm. I think that's also what he's very interested in as an artist.
When we were planning out on doing this episode, you mentioned that the 1975 is your favorite band and you almost implied that it was like a guilty pleasure or something like
that. Yeah, I did.
And I get the sense that that's to do with their front man, who we've been talking almost interchangeably with as if he is the band.
Yeah, the band himself. Matty, because I feel like he is just that face. Like you think of the 1975, you think of him, you think of his cigarette, you think of his sunglasses and a suit. Yeah, Matty Healy is just like, he is just a figure. I think for most of his career, he's just been known for embodying all these contradictions. Like he's very, he can get very sentimental and talk about sincerity and talk about his work. But then he also like is on podcasts with like alt-right, weird meme, edgelord, like incel culture. And he's just such, he's such a weird figure because he's so involved in the internet and he's so knowledgeable of all these things. And then he uses the internet to just like drop every thought that comes out of his mind. And sometimes it's not the best thought. He should really just be quiet a little bit. Once he also kind of started dating Taylor Swift, they had that brief stint last summer or spring. He got thrust into like all this limelight and all these people knowing who he is that were originally not fans or didn't know him. And I feel like he just kind of said, he just says things without thinking about it. And then he hits all this backlash and he's like knows about all this backlash, but he still doesn't like apologize or do anything. And it's like, I don't think that he's necessarily like a bad person. I don't know him, but I feel like it's that idea of the celebrity. Like, what do you do as a celebrity? How do you interact with people? How do you interact with the internet? How do you establish those relationships when everything you do is kind of being watched, which I think is really interesting.
Very well put.
These feelings I've got.
The title of this album is lifted from the title of an essay, which I quickly read through before doing this episode. And it's kind of just going through how online relationships, as opposed to real life social relationships, the kind of conventions of communicating are not fully established yet because it's such a new,
it's so new, kind
of thing. So it's almost like hard to tell which relationships online are beneficial and which are harmful.
Exactly. That's actually a really good point. You've done your homework. That's crazy.
Another like common comparison that was made to this album when it came out was talking about OK Computer, people saying it's the OK Computer for young millennials and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that that comparison is interesting, like just because it's a sort of an album that's completely of the internet age.
Yeah, definitely. Where I think Radiohead's wasn't.
Yeah, very, like, of the computer
kind of
age.
Start of the computer age. Exactly. I feel like there's a few songs, like one song is like, The Man Who Married a Robot, the love theme. I think that's very much a spiritual predecessor to OK Computer.
Yeah.
And there's like a kind of exit, like an outro to that song that's very reminiscent of like exit music for a film from Radiohead. So I feel like it's just very interesting to try to make that comparison, especially because I don't really like Radiohead that much. Like, sorry, controversial. But I feel like it's good.
Life will change, but you're sat on a train again. Your memories, your sceneries, for things you said never really meant. You build it to a height to say goodbye, because you know same as them. It's your death, it won't happen to you, it happens to your family. And she finds
Sophia, final thoughts on A Brief Inquiry into Online Relationships by the 1975.
I love this album. I think it's their best album. I think like Pitchfork also thinks it's their best album, which I don't think Pitchfork's the most like relevant thing to read, but I love reading them all the time. I think that it's fun. There's no skips. It also hits hard. And yeah, it's just, it's bonded me to people closest to me in my life, and I love it.
Okay, next up, we have an album that both of us really wanted to speak to each other about on this show, because it's one that has really dominated the indie music discourse this year. Yeah. It's going to be tough to find something new and interesting to say about this album, but we're going to try today. The next album is from 2024. It's McGee with Two Star and the Dream Police. Sophia, like almost at every opportunity that I've had to talk to somebody about music this year and recommend a release from this year, this is jumping right to the top of my head. Two Star and the Dream Police by McGee.
For sure.
What is it with this album?
I was just saying this before we went on air. It scratches an itch in my brain that I can't find anywhere else. Like there's bits and pieces of it in other songs and others of his influences, which is really cool. Like we mentioned like a Phil Collins vibe, the Blue Nile, which is also one of my favorite bands. And it's like when I listen to those artists, I really enjoy it. When I listen to McGee, it's like all of the things I love about each of those artists just come together in one.
There's something about his sound where it sounds super modern, but he's like referencing something old in a way.
It's so like the vibe is so 80s, like the synthy kind of background, like the glittery kind of background. But then there's like this guitar that's so like grungy and like it's so loud and it's everywhere. And it's just like addicting in a way. And it's so funny because we were talking about how so many people are mentioning McGee. All my friends are on the McGee train. Mm-hmm. Paul Mescal's now on the McGee train at the Gladiator premiere. And like I showed my dad, like this is like music that I'm like, Dad, you need to listen to this. And he's a really picky man. So it's like, that's when you know it's super good.
And speaking about the dad music cosign, I mentioned to you like that Eric Clapton mentioned that McGee reminds him of an early Prince, which
crazy.
Is like in his guitar style.
Yeah.
And the guitar really is the star of the show here. It's right there in the middle of the cover. Mm-hmm. And his sort of the sound that he's creating with the guitar is something that is so just him.
Yeah, exactly. It's so unique. And it's exactly why it's like, I can't find it anywhere else right now. Like I try to go, well, maybe on the album that we're going to talk about later, there's a bit of that influence, but I just feel like it's so present. Mm-hmm. And also like seeing him do like live shows, clips of his live shows, it sounds insane. Like I feel like not even the songs aren't even that sad, but I feel like I'll just like burst into tears hearing that guitar.
And this album began as a series of live performances that he posted on YouTube where he was on that bus. And I think like the nighttime bus ride energy.
Yeah.
It's sort of that dreamlike, the cover of the album, even he's sort of leaning out a window of a vehicle.
Yeah. It's just, it's atmospheric.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I just want to be in that world all the time.
Candy is all in my business. And if she's looking hard, she don't find it. Maybe you're just wasting time. Girl, you just like to fantasize. The candy likes to fantasize. In the middle of the night, I'm calling. Screaming like you lost all your conscience. But I repeat it time and time.
Now, this title, Two Star and the Dream Police, is not obviously explained by the content of the music, I felt like. But McGee did do an interview in February of this year where he spoke about the title and what it means for the purpose of the album.
There's some, yeah, there's a little story weaving in through the record sonically and lyrically. But I guess the whole concept of Two Star and the Dream Police is really supposed to feel like a storybook. You know, it's supposed to be kind of like this liminal storybook you're flipping through sonically and lyrically. Yeah, it's really, the whole record's really about a second coming of this hero. Yeah, it's supposed to be kind of like some sort of second coming, and it's supposed to feel like that, and it's supposed to kind of honor this some sort of hero archetype that this character is, Two Star.
So he's talking about Two Star as a character, and when I think of that, the name Two Star and the Dream Police kind of sounds like the name of a band.
Yeah, it really does.
He's talking about reviving a hero archetype, which makes me think of the sort of guitar hero term, which you don't hear used in music too much anymore. And I think that McGee, it sounds like, is really interested in the rock star archetype and sort of twisting it and like playing with it on this album.
Yeah, I totally get that with you. And it also kind of, it brings this kind of new sort of meaning to the lyrics. I feel like when I'm focusing on this album, it's very much about that liminal atmosphere that I'm in. But songs like Candy, songs like I Want and Alesis, it's very like self-critical. And it's like that idea of like the rock star, the center of a band. That's such like an interesting, fascinating archetype. And it's like, how do you wrestle with like imposter syndrome, wanting to play music, wanting to be an artist, having like the Dream Police, like kind of having people like following your career, following you as this person, being the center of kind of everything. And how do you just like, how do you grapple with that without kind of that doubt, that imposter syndrome, which I feel like is really interesting. I'd never thought of it that way before.
Humanity and character in rock music is something that he talks about as well in that same interview, talking about the sound of this album, about music being human versus not.
You know, like overdubbing to sound, make a record sound more raw or to sound more like, you know, relatable is insane to me.
It's like reverse engineering.
I think it's evil. I think it's truly evil. And I think the purpose of this record was to make something as alien as possible, but something that is like, I shouldn't understand it, but I do understand it. And that was the whole purpose of the record.
So he talks about wanting to remove the humanity from music.
Which is really interesting, kind of like the opposite of what Matty Healy's doing a little bit.
Exactly.
Like, trying to bring that humanity back and like constantly critique it and make comments on it. And McGee's trying to like exist in this separate world, this world removed, which I think is really interesting because what we were just saying is when people are like, it's raw, but I really think like that guitar, yeah, as raw as it is, but there's all that, there's so much going on around you.
In a way, it's like barely even identifiable sometimes.
Exactly.
You're sort of listening and it's like a mush or a dream or a cloud.
I also feel like when it comes to like what he's known for, which is like his guitar playing, people always talk about how there's like such a liminal setup on stage.
Yeah.
Not that many pedals.
Yeah.
So it's literally like, how does he get that sound?
Yeah.
It is like very much like inhuman. Like, how is he doing that? He's on like another level.
From the things I've seen, the key to his sound is that he's running all of his guitar sounds through a cassette tape, which is giving it like that retro weirdness.
Yeah, I love when artists get creative and they're kind of like, how do I take the things that I have in my daily life, in my daily production, and just get crazy with it? Like, how do I produce something new? How do I make a new sound? And I feel like that's really like kind of what he's concerned with in this album.
What he mentioned at the end there, where you feel like you shouldn't understand it, but you do, is something I relate to so hard with this music, because it's hard to almost put people onto McGee, because it's hard to describe why they're going to like it.
Exactly.
And, you know, his sound is so accessible. Like, it's not too abstract. It's not too weird, but it's hard to like explain the catchiness or the appeal.
Exactly. Like, there's something about it. Even I was telling my dad to listen to it. He was like, okay, cool. Like, what does he do? And I was like, I don't know, but you'll like it. I feel like that's such a good point. That's so interesting.
We'll be right back.
Sophia, final thoughts on Two Star and the Dream Police by McGee.
I have to say, I think it's the one that I visited the most this year. I think it might be my favorite. And there's been so much, like so much good music this year. So I think that's a lot. I think this is my favorite.
Okay, Sophia, our third and final album of the day is one that I have been putting everyone who's into the McGee train. This is the next stop on the train.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, you've done it. You've done it with me as well.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Of course.
Jonah Yano and the Heavy Loop from 2024. This is the brand new album from Canadian Japanese musician Jonah Yano. And it is just stunning, atmospheric, so interesting, and potentially going to end up being my album of the year.
Nice.
Demonstrate.
Okay, so where do we start with this one, Jonah Yano and the Heavy Loop? We just talked about McGee, and this is like a natural next progression. The first thing that I thought of with this is that in the same way that we talked about McGee playing with the rock star or the rock archetypes, I think that Jonah is doing that a little bit with the jazz thing. You hear like the jazz instruments, the saxophone and the piano, like sprinkled like little dust over the top of all this music. But it's like also just got that mystical, dreamlike sort of thing going through it. What were your first thoughts when you hit play on this?
Oh my gosh. It was like layers and layers of like, I'm picking out like so many different things happening. His voice also is so interesting. Like it's kind of this like raspy, high pitched, like growl, but it's also so sweet. And I feel like, as like a person who's a big fan of McGee, I feel like this is the next, like the next step, the next section, like the next thing to like really like delve into. There's just so much going on. Again, like very atmospheric, but also in a completely different way, which I feel like is really interesting.
And I should mention that the McGee Jonah Yano connection is not just in the sound of the music. They are friends in real life.
Yeah.
And I was even hearing that they met in Toronto at the Omar Apollo show. So it's just like, oh my God, like the indie music connections are all...
That is crazy. You were sending me pictures and I was like, they're just the two goats.
Yeah.
Two goats
seriously.
In one room.
Jonah is originally from Japan, but then moved to Canada when he was young, and he's currently on tour through Canada, and then in 2025, he's going to be making his way to Japan to tour this album.
Nice.
And the song that really stuck out to me as the one that I have to put forward and was one of the original singles was Romance ESL, where he's talking about trying to find connection when you don't speak the language.
Yeah. I feel like that's like a very big thorough line in the three albums we've listened to, is this idea of connection and celebrity and trying to make your way and to get with other people, like not get with other people, but connect with other people.
Like trying to communicate when there's a barrier between you and other people, whether that barrier is the internet or a language, also kind of comes through in the sound of the albums where the vocals are heavily filtered or whispered or growled, like you said.
Yeah.
I think it's so cool when these sort of like lyrical or thematic things, like literally you can hear it maybe without even speaking the language.
Exactly. And it just kind of emphasizes that point, right? Of just how do we, like, we can share something together for a moment, even if we're not completely on the same plane of understanding. Like they're like through music, like we'll be able to get to a certain level of understanding that we wouldn't through like the barrier of the internet or language or celebrity, which I feel like is really, really sick.
I'm watching how I speak. I don't want them noticing me. I'm from the outside. I don't want them to see my disguise. When the metro car fills up with eyes, luckily I pray between the words I speak. That the spoken word casts a permanent light. If you won't sell me, I'll say whatever I want. And if you won't sell me, well, I'll say.
There's so much there. I feel like it's literally like you're wrapping yourself up in a blanket. Mm-hmm. You're reading a book. Like there's so much you can pay attention to, and you can also just get lost in it at the same time.
Yeah.
Like walking down a snowy street. Like that's what I'd want to be listening to.
It's hard to even think about how Jonah Yano might be writing these songs, because they're like just they make me think of just sort of like scattered little memories and like glimpses of dreams and stuff like that. It's all like so wishy-washy and abstract, which makes it like so re-listenable.
Exactly. I feel like, every time you listen to it, you'll get something new. I know I have. I listened to it a couple times preparing for this episode. And every time there's like a new song that I want to hit replay on again and again. Maybe not the last one because it is 30 minutes long.
Yeah.
But the rest of them for sure.
But we should mention that last song. The album itself is an hour long and 30 minutes of that is tied up in that final song, which is this sort of long, like progressing ambient jazz thing with very, very minimal lyrics. This album, Joni Yano and the Heavy Loop, I'm even having trouble like dissecting all of this. And I keep on like sort of digging into the different rabbit holes. You'll see on the cover in the bottom right, there's some Japanese text there, which translates to eternal return, which is like a philosophical concept about basically being stuck in a time loop. You mentioned the experience of listening to this without looking at the...
Yes, exactly. I was like, this song's good. And then I was like going about my, like, I was making tea. I like went to the bathroom. I like did all this stuff. And I was like, this song is like still playing. I was like, what's going on? I look at my phone. I'm like 10 minutes into a 30 minute song. And I was like, oh, okay. But you know what? Like lyrically and thematically, you're talking about like being stuck in like a heavy loop. I feel like that's kind of what I felt like. I was like, the song again. It's still going. It's still going. I actually felt stuck. So as like an English major, the metaphorical resonance of that, it's so good.
I'm not
Sophia, final thoughts on Joni Yano and the Heavy Loop?
I want to thank you personally for showing it to me. It's so fun. I think it's going to definitely be on my radar